Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into on a Thursday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing well, Arash. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. Wanted to, you know, get your thoughts on a few things. Again, you know, a weird time of year for us here at the Sporting Tribune, where a lot of our local teams, we got very fortunate last year, very fortunate that the Lakers went all the way to the Western Conference Finals. The Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup. Not the case this year. No Lakers, no Clippers, no Golden Knights, no Kings. The Ducks did get the number three pick in the draft, which will be held at the Sphere. But we have plenty of time to get into that in June. Wanted to talk to you about the postseason going on right now. We got the Pacers and the Knicks. Again, I think it's always a fun time when you got the two teams in New York who are in the postseason. You got the New York Rangers in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You have the New York Knicks taking a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Pacers. Again, two wins away, Grant, from going on to the conference finals. What are your thoughts on this Knicks team? Again, Jalen Brunson is playing extremely well. They're not a particularly deep team now with the guys who they have hurt. But your thoughts on the New York Knicks?
Yeah, you nailed it right on the head at the end there. They have some issues with their injuries. I mean, I know that they're up 2-0 now, and that was a great win for them. They were down by 10 at the half, and Jalen Brunson kind of, you know, there was a question if he was even going to play the rest of the game because he had a sore left foot. And he ended up playing the rest of the game, not looking like the Jalen Brunson that we thought in the third quarter, but in the fourth quarter, he took over. And that was a Jalen Brunson that we've seen all year. He has the most fourth quarter points in the league. He's one of the best clutch players in the league. And he did it again. And, you know, in that fourth quarter, OG Anunoby pulled up with a hamstring injury, and it looked really bad, Arash. And he had 28 points last night. And that's a guy that they really need. I mean, he's an excellent defender, a great two-way guy. I don't think, Arash, that we will see OG Anunoby the rest of the series. And that is huge. Yeah. It looked really bad. It may even be a hamstring tear from what I've seen. So they will probably not have him the rest of the series. They do have Precious Achiuwa, who stepped in and did a great job. He had a lot of offensive rebounds in that second half in place of OG. But like you mentioned, their depth is not one of their strengths right now. I mean, they're already missing Mitchell Robinson. They're already missing Julius Randle. These are two critical guys that they need. But what they do have is just grit and toughness and energy. I mean, Josh Hart, after the game last night, he said, like, I don't know how I'm doing this. Like, I'm playing full games, and he was just kind of baffled by himself, and he had to credit God with how he's been playing all these minutes. And, you know, these guys, Dante DiVincenzo hit a few big threes. Like, that trio of Josh Hart, Brunson, and DiVincenzo, I mean, those three guys are kind of carrying this offense. And a former Clipper legend and a guy that I thought the Clippers should have re-signed in Isaiah Hartenstein. Yeah. He has been playing great in place of Mitchell Robinson. He looks like a diet Nikola Jokic, I guess you could say. So he's playing really well. And for the Pacers, I mean, they were right there. They have a chance to get back in the series. I do think that they'll win game three back at home. They played really well at home against the Bucks. I know the Bucks were hurt in round one, but the Pacers are right there. Their defense just crumbles down the stretch. And that was one of my main issues with them all year, is that they cannot defend anybody. And, you know, even with Pascal Siakam, even with some of the guys that they have, they just could not defend the Knicks down the stretch, and that's what led to this 2-0 lead. But I mean, to see Knicks Pacers in 2024, I mean, I remember the 90s matchups with Reggie Miller and Mark Jackson and against the Knicks and all the stuff with Spike Lee and Reggie Miller. It was so cool. It's just so cool to see these two teams again in the playoffs with this heated rivalry playing again.
Yeah, it's just something that there's nothing like it. And I say that as someone, you know, who's from Los Angeles, loves Los Angeles, but I did get to live for 1 year in New York. And, you know, postseason, this time of year where it's the Knicks and it's the Rangers, it's a fun time. Again, I would compare it to when the Lakers are playing through June. Again, when the Kings, you know, won the Cup in 2012 and 2014. Again, seeing the community get around the team is really big. So I, despite them being hurt, I do think the Knicks are obviously in a very good position to perhaps win that series. I don't love them against the Celtics, but let's get into that series next. Tonight, we have the Cavaliers and the Celtics. We have the Mavericks and the Thunder. Both home teams in that series are looking for a 2-0 series lead. The Celtics blew out the Cavs in game one. I just got to imagine this is going to be a very one-sided series. The Celtics, by the way, Grant, favored 13.5. You don't see that too often in the postseason. I mean, 13.5. I mean, come on. What are your thoughts on that game tonight?
Yeah, that's a wild line right there. But I mean, it's kind of justified. I mean, this Celtics team is just so much better than the Cavaliers. They would have been so much better than the Orlando Magic if they would have beat the Cavaliers in game seven. I think they're better. They're far and away the best team in the East.
Yeah.
In my opinion, this could be a 5-game series again for the Celtics. The Cavaliers, look, they're really disjointed on offense. A lot of their offense is just Donovan Mitchell taking over. And I was kind of surprised. Like, the Cavaliers hung around in game one for a little bit until, like, the fourth quarter, and then the Celtics pulled away. They kept hovering around, like, 10 to 12 points, and I was actually really surprised. They don't have Jared Allen. He's been missing, you know, since, I think, game five of the last series for the Cavaliers. So I expect the Celtics to win big. And look, I don't think this is the problem with the Celtics. I think it's the conference finals and the finals. Like, we know that they have the ability to get to those two rounds. But for me, it's just the process. It's not really, you know, what they're doing right now. It's not how much they're winning by. It's just keeping your foot on the pedal, because that was their issue the last year and the year before that, is why they haven't won a final since 2008. They can't keep their foot on the pedal when they need to, and they run into these teams that just have more fight than them, more energy than them, like the Miami Heat last year. So I think for the Celtics, it's just good process. Like, they lost a game against the Heat in round one, and I just did not expect that to happen. That I know the Heat drained like 20 plus threes, but it just looked like the Celtics tuned out for a game, and you just can't have that. It looked like last year. So as much as people in our markets don't like to admit it, the Celtics are a very good basketball team, and they are probably going to come out of the East and represent the East in the finals. But for now, I think that it will be a 5-game series, Arash. There's really not much I can point to and see the Cavaliers getting back into this. Maybe they might win one where they get really hot, because they did in the regular season, but I expect the Celtics to steamroll through this round.
You know, speaking of steamrolling, you know, when you look at the Thunder and the Wolves so far this postseason, and again, the Wolves and the Nuggets will resume their series tomorrow night. But, you know, the Wolves took a 2-0 series lead, winning the first two games at Denver. They've won 6 straight games. The Thunder, who play tonight, they're going for their 6th straight win in the postseason. You know, these two young teams, you know, kind of, you know, sweeping through the first round and again, trying to take commanding 2-0 series leads. Let's start with the Thunder. What have you seen from them that have allowed them to do that? And I bring that up because while these two teams have been two of the best teams in the West this year, I think that the common thought, and again, I said this about the Sacramento Kings a year ago, is something different in the postseason. You know, it's one thing to be a top four, top three, top two seed in the regular season, but come playoff time, you know, I said this for years about the Jazz, the young Jazz teams, like, it's different. This has not affected these two teams. Again, if they are to meet in the Western Conference Finals, one of them for the first time this postseason may face some like adversity. But what have you liked about the Thunder, and what are your thoughts on this game tonight against the Mavericks?
Yeah, they're so connected. They're just so connected on defense. Like, they know exactly where to switch to. They know, I mean, these guys are very smart basketball players. Like, Kayson Wallace is a very smart defender. He can hit the three at a high clip. Jalen Williams is emerging as one of the best young players in the NBA alongside SGA. These guys just know where they're going to be. They know what sets to run. They're very smart. They're very well coached by Mark Daigneault. And, you know, there was a mic'd up audio clip from Jalen Williams in game one where an opposing player from the Mavericks, I think it was Lawson, he said, "Hey, man, you guys are a really good basketball team." If you have the opposing team saying that about you in a game one, I mean, that's pretty good props. And I got to give a lot of credit to Lu Dort. I mean, Lu Dort has been one of the best defenders in the league for a long time, in my opinion. I've always loved him, even since his rookie year. But now we're finally seeing it on a bigger stage, on a national stage. And he is making it very hard for Luka and Kyrie to do anything on offense. I mean, Luka had another inefficient game in game one. I expect him to kind of be taken out of the game plan. It looks like what the Thunder are trying to do. They're just saying, hey, everyone else beat us, but Kyrie and Luka, you're not going to do it. Yeah. And that's a smart game plan because it works. It worked for the Clippers back in 21 when they did that. And it looks like the Thunder are going with that kind of concept. They're switching hard. They play with a lot of energy and offense. They feed off of that excellent home crowd. And, you know, for the Thunder, it's not going to be easy, though. This is what I know. I'm giving them a lot of props and I'm seeing a lot of positive things. But the Mavericks, I think the Mavericks might win this game, too. Okay. Just because I just think that in game one, we saw it in the last series. They were really out of it. They're kind of feeling their way around it. I expect them to use Daniel Gafford more. Expect them to use Derek Lively a lot more. I think Luke is going to have a little bit of a better game. He looks really hobbled out there. I don't know if that's real or not, because in game six of the Clippers series, he did not look like this. Yeah. But maybe that's just the Clippers thing and people hate them. But him and Kyrie have to get it going, and I expect Kyrie to have a better game. I expect Luka to have a better game. This will not be a blowout like game one. I think it's going to be very close, but man, what a fun series. I mean, this Thunder team is so cool. The Wolves team is so cool to watch. It's fun to watch connected and like really high energy basketball. And that's what we're getting from these two series.
And then switching gears again, this series has taken a break until Friday, where it is switching locations to Minneapolis, Minnesota. You got the Wolves, you got the Nuggets. I mean, this is one of those series where, you know, where when the road team win the first two games, and now the Timberwolves host games three and four. I mean, it goes without saying, I'm not really going out on a limb. Denver has to win this game three, because then at that point we could be talking about a sweep. And again, it would be one of those sweeps that came out of nowhere. We talked about the Mavs-Lakers series in 2011 I covered, where it's like, wait, did that season just come to an end? Again, the defending champions, they were the top seed. Your thoughts on the Wolves? Now, again, they've really looked impressive. They've not only won, they've dominated the first two games. Jamal Murray got lucky he wasn't suspended. I didn't think he would, but again, getting fined six figures, $100,000. This is a series that could be done if they don't win game three. What are the chances you give Denver to win game three?
I'm not going to count out Denver at all, just because it's Denver, and I've had probably two full years of watching them to understand that they're not out of any game, they're not out of any series. And this is honestly probably the largest deficit they've faced in a long time in terms of a playoff series. And this is probably the worst I've seen Denver play in a long time, regular season included. But that's just a lot of credit to the Wolves' defense. Like I was mentioning about OKC, how they're so connected. The Wolves are better. This may be one of the best defenses I've seen in my years of watching basketball. I know that the 0-4 Pistons are there, and they were fantastic. And I know even the 89 Bad Boys Pistons were very tough and gritty. But this Wolves team is really good. Even the 0-9 Lakers were really good on defense. But this Wolves team could be up there with the top five defense I have ever seen. Just by the way, they have so much length. They know how to switch and close out on perimeter guys. They are really making it difficult for even Michael Porter Jr. to get anything off. They're really hounding Jamal Murray. They're blitzing him. They're doubling him. Yeah. With Nikola Jokic, they're sticking to him. They're blocking his shots in the paint, which I don't really see a lot. And look, the Nuggets have their own issues too. A lot of the talk about this year's Denver Nuggets was their bench, and Reggie Jackson looks like he hurt himself pretty bad. I don't know if he's going to play in this next game, but if you're missing him, and you know, that bench is already pretty thin. You know, you're really not expecting a lot from the bench from the Nuggets in every game that they play. It's usually the starters that are going to take them and carry them. So if Reggie Jackson is out and Jamal Murray already has a calf strain, Arash, like, they're getting a little bit thin down there, and you're going to have to play some guys that usually don't play a lot of minutes. So I'm not going to say that it's concerning yet, just because I know the potential of this Denver Nuggets team and how good they are. But what the Wolves are doing, not just on defense, but on offense, Karl-Anthony Towns is emerging. This is his best playoff series in his three that he's played already. You know, he's looking really good, to averaging 20 points a game in these playoffs, alongside Anthony Edwards, who is emerging, like we've mentioned many times over the past week, as this next superstar, the next face of the league. I think for the Wolves, it's not getting too cocky. It's not getting your head too high. It's not, you know, carrying yourselves as you've already won this series. It's, you know, sticking to business. And they have, during this whole playoff run so far, you know, sticking to your business, taking care of what you have to do, staying connected on defense, staying locked in. Because with these young teams and these young players, this was my issue with them and why I thought that they wouldn't make a deep run, is because they have this inexperience. So keep your head level. And look, you're still playing the defending champs. The series isn't over. You've won two. Great accomplishment. But for the Wolves, keep up that intensity and keep up that locked-in defense that you've been playing.
What are your thoughts when teams file formal complaints? Again, the one that we heard today were the Pacers, and I don't know if I've ever heard the number reported in this way, but the Pacers have submitted 78 instances of incorrect or non-calls to the league through games one and two. That is a staggering number. I mean, normally, again, teams file a complaint over a missed or non-call at the end of the game. They'll protest a result. It doesn't matter, of course. But listen, clearly they are trying to get some home cooking as this series now shifts to Indiana. But 78 calls or non-calls, again, I don't know if I've ever seen a number that big.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. I thought it was like a typo when they actually typed it out, because, I mean, I don't even know if there's 76 calls in one two games. Like, I obviously don't count the calls, but, like, you know, Rick Carlisle after the game in game two last night, I mean, he was like, I wish that, you know, small market teams would get the same calls as big market teams. And while he does have a point, I mean, I don't think that's what they're going for in terms of the NBA. I just think that obviously a more experienced team in the Knicks, and a team that I know that the league probably wants in the Eastern Conference Finals in the Knicks, they're going to get the betterment of the calls. They're going to get better calls. Yeah. I mean, there was a controversial call at the end of game one, an illegal offensive foul, an illegal screen that kind of flipped the game and flipped the momentum for Indiana. I kind of understand that one. In game two, there was another offensive foul against Jalen Brunson late in the game that kind of flipped the script and allowed the Knicks to go on a run. So there are some ticky-tack calls, but both of those calls I feel like could go either way. Like, it's not like a definitive call that shifted the entirety of the game. Like, the Pacers had their own issues. They were really bad down the stretch. They couldn't defend anybody. And against a shorthanded Knicks team, there's no excuse for you to lose two games. You have to split at least one. And the Pacers are still in these games. It's not like they're getting blown out in any of these games. They had a lead at the half, and they just blew it. So I do understand the frustration. Like, I do get it. And I don't think I've ever seen 78 calls being sent to the NBA office. And I don't think anything's going to come out of that. Even when teams try to put games under protest, nothing ever happens. They just come out with the 2-minute report and they say, hey, this happened, this didn't, and let's move on. So I do think that in game three, Arash, we will see the Pacers get a lot of calls, because I've seen a lot of coaches complain before, and the next game they usually get the calls, or usually see a shift in free throw percentage or free throws attempted. So in game three, I do expect the Pacers to get a lot of calls, and I think they'll win game three, but 78 is just wild. And Rick Carlisle was really upset. He got ejected from game two.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think clearly they're trying to get some of the calls going their way, and that's why that got leaked Real quick, last 90 seconds, the Dodgers are off today, and then they begin a series with the Padres at Petco Park. Dodgers, once again, about a half game, or just about the best team in baseball right now. Your thoughts on the Blue Crew?
Yeah, they are playing such great baseball, and it's coming at a time where they usually get it together. Like in April, they usually have a rocky April, and then in May and June, that's when they really take off. It's like every year they do the same thing. Their bullpen has been fantastic, like way better. I mean, last year in the second half, they were really good too. That's been one of their key points. Even without Evan Phillips, they're getting guys back. Like I mentioned, Walker Buehler last show. Andy Páez has been a revelation. They brought him up finally, and he looks like the next kind of Yasiel Puig sensation for the Dodgers, and he's Cuban too, so it kind of makes sense. But he looks really, really good. This team is firing on all. Mookie Betts is playing great. Will Smith has kept up his offensive production, and the starting pitching is getting it together. So I think for them, this is how I expect them to play. But like I've mentioned many, many times, I'm waiting for late into the season. I'm waiting for them to do it in October, not right now.
Exactly. You know, as fun as this time is, and I tell fans, enjoy this time of year. Yes, there will be plenty of time to stress and worry come October, but you're right. This time of year, certainly during the summer, is when the Dodgers go on their run. So make it a point to go out to Blue Heaven on Earth. Enjoy yourself. Grab a Dodger dog. I know it's expensive this season, but
it's worth it.
It's worth it. Have fun while the team is doing their thing, and then we can all stress together come October. Grant, you're the best. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll bring in Brandon Deutsch to talk about the NBA postseason. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline, 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome in from the Sporting Tribune, Brandon Deutsch. He'll be out at the Big A covering the, not the Dodgers, the Angels. Listen, I mean, we'll talk about them down the line, but I do want to talk to you about a few things. You did not go out on a limb here, but you've been right about who has been the best player in the league for quite some time, not just this season, but for a few years now. Nikola Jokic, now three-time most valuable player. You are a big stats guy, Brandon. Explain and tell the folks out there, A, why he deserved it this year, and why, quite frankly, he has been the best player in the league for at least a few years. Not just three, but at least, you know, the last few years.
Yeah, sorry, I was just responding to someone on Twitter about Jokic, doing a bunch of Jokic advanced stats threads and stuff like that for the script writer's account. I was just about to bring this up. It's perfect that you brought it up because I was just working on it. Jokic joined Michael Jordan and LeBron James as the only players to have three MVPs since 1990. Obviously, Bird had done that previously. So since 1990, elite company already, the two best players of all time, right? Led the NBA yet again in player efficiency rating 31, highest by a fair margin in the league. Giannis was actually second, believe it or not. And he averaged an insane 26.4 points per game, 12.4 rebounds per game, 9 assists per game with an EFG percentage of 61.2, true shooting percentage of 65. What's even more impressive is 25 triple-doubles, 68 double-doubles, and 79 games. Okay, you could make the argument that this season, though, Luka Doncic had the first 33-9-9 season in NBA history, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander led league in steals, averaged 36-5, best player on first team in West, were better candidates than Joel Embiid last season. I would make that argument. I know Joel Embiid last season averaged 33 points, 10 rebounds, 1.7 blocks per game, which is great, but I don't think he should have won the MVP. Believe it or not, Arash, Jokic last season was better. 31.6 player efficiency rating, 70% true shooting percentage, which is a 5% increase. His points per 100 shot attempts last season was 141.2. I know the listeners, I'm throwing a lot of stats out there. 141.2 ranked in the 95th percentile, with his usage percentage top in the league for bigs. This season was 131, so he's down 10, 81st percentile. Still amazing because of his usage percentage. But he didn't have as good of a season as last year, which begs the question. It should be a four-time MVP in a row, right? Like, if you were going to give it to him this year, he deserved it last year, right? And I would have been fine with him not getting it this year, even though I would have personally voted for Jokic. I think he should have won last year, and you should have given it maybe, if you had voter fatigue this year, to a Luka or a Shea, who I thought were better candidates than Embiid was last season, personally. But I still would have voted Jokic one, slightly over Luka Doncic two, and Shea three. And I know Shea finished second, which kind of surprised me. Because Luka was just so dominant all year long. I'm not saying Shea wasn't, but his team is way better, Shea's, in my opinion. So I definitely wanted to throw that out there. But Jokic, obviously the best player in the league, going to need to do some stuff to not get swept, right? Or at least, you know, come back in the series against Minnesota. But an excellent season nonetheless.
Yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes you take greatness for granted, you know, for a long time. You know, for example, with Jordan, like, he didn't win Most Valuable Player every year because they want to kind of spread the love a little bit. And with Kobe, he only won it once. And so I think a lot of times we want to, you know, give some other players a chance, whether it's Giannis, whether it's Joel Embiid, no knock on them. Again, they deserved it when they won. But, you know, you could clearly make the case that Jokic has been the most deserving player for quite some time. Also wanted to bring up some news that, you know, we heard about today, not quite official, but it would be weird if the NBA is no longer on Turner. Again, that is some of the reports we're hearing from Sports Business Journal, that, again, there could be three different companies that have the league's media rights. ESPN, obviously, will be a part of it. A streaming service will be a part of it. But NBC, amazingly, that is the network I grew up watching the league with, and it looks like they may come back. Brandon, I mean, while you were growing up, and again, for the longest time, I mean, this is not just over the past 20 years. I mean, for the past 30, maybe even 40 years, TNT, TBS, and Turner have been a part of the league, and they have the best studio show in all of sports. What would that mean to no longer have Turner in the mix?
It'd be weird. You know, we've been grown accustomed to seeing it on TNT for a long time. They have one of the best shows in all of sports and inside the NBA. You know, I mean, Shaq and Chuck have some asinine takes, but their chemistry is undeniable. They're great TV. Ernie is one of the best commentators, you know, like, I don't know how you say that. I guess, like, not a commentator, but you know what I mean. Host, I guess you could say host. One of the best hosts in the business of any show. Kenny's cool there, too. They just have a great disposition, those four, and it's been on TNT forever, right? Like, not aside from the actual games, right? Because people will watch the games. It doesn't matter if it's on TNT, NBC. Like, people will watch it, right? On cable, or, and now it's been, you know, we're seeing a lot of less views because of illegal streaming services. That's right. I do, you know, I'm interested to see, because I've heard Prime Video for a long time, like the streaming networks have been in contact with Adam Silver on getting, like, a, you know, how Apple TV has Friday Night Baseball, and Apple TV also spent a lot of money with on Messi in the MLS getting, you know, that type of coverage as well. I'm interested to see, like, Amazon, how many games they get for next season, or if they're able to come to an agreement with, you know, Adam Silver further and all those streaming services. Because it's weird, right? Like, we live in this era where we, like, 10 years ago, it was cable, right? And then all the streaming services, oh, they're better, right? Like, okay, we'll cancel cable, too expensive. And now all the streaming services are competing as cable, basically, again. Because now they're going to get live sports. They raise their prices. people are trying to create a monopoly, but it's kind of like now instead of Time Warner Cable and whatever, what was the other one? DirecTV.
Right, yeah.
Now it's kind of like Amazon Prime, Apple, Netflix, if you all have live sports there, right? Like it's kind of the same thing, which is really interesting because it's kind of a full circle thing. I just think it's weird, right? Because it is interesting because TNT was saving a lot of cable networks because of basketball, and so was Fox and CBS with football, right? So if those start, we already saw that a false start to go to Prime. If they do more and more and more, I mean, cable is just, it's gone because live sports is the only thing keeping cable alive.
Yeah. Wanted to get your thoughts on what's happening around the NBA right now. Last night, the Knicks take a commanding 2-0 series lead. They've been very hurt, though, Brandon. I mean, if they find a way to win two more, I think the health of this team will be a big question going into a potential series with the Boston Celtics. The Pacers, and again, I don't know what's going to come of it, but sending a note to the league, filing a complaint for 78 missed calls or non-calls through the first two games of the series. I'm assuming that they're just trying to get some calls going their way for games 3 and 4 on their home court. Your thoughts on that series so far?
Yeah, I think it's a good series. Both games have been close. I don't think it's going to be a sweep, especially with OG and Anobi being out and Brunson dinged up. I do expect the Pacers to win, if not one, both games at home.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a 6-game series. I think I've always said Knicks in 6. I stand by it. But without Anunoby, I mean, they're really thin. But it's hard to bet against the Knicks. I mean, they just have moxie. They play the game the right way. I think that's a series that's going to be one of the more exciting ones. Because Indiana's looked excellent at home this season. So I expect them to fully take advantage of not having OG Anunoby out there, having less of a defense on Siakam. You have to put Josh Hart on Siakam now. Siakam's going to score like 35 points next game.
We've got a big line, not surprisingly, following the big 25-point win by the Celtics over the Pacers. Line for tonight, 13.5. Listen, I think that there's no doubt that the Celtics are the best team in the East right now. Do you foresee a blowout and potential sweep there?
I'd lay it if I was betting on it. It sounds crazy, but I mean, the Celtics, I think, have covered those high lines and seven out of eight.
Up.
My bad.
You there for 1 second. Yeah.
Yeah. It was only one game, I believe, where the Heat actually, as straight up dogs, won. Yeah. But 7 out of 8 games where they've been favored by 10 or more points and they've actually covered. So they're clicking on all cylinders. This is a 4 or 5 game series. It was always going to be that.
Yeah.
In fact, people better be rooting for the Knicks to beat the Pacers because that'll at least be somewhat competitive against the Celtics, like maybe 5 or 6 games. If the Pacers win that series, I love the Pacers, but they'd lose in 4 to Boston. So I'm just hoping who has the greatest chance to beat the Celtics. That's kind of what I'm rooting for at this point.
I was just going to say, we're both in the same boat. Like anybody but the Celtics, like I will root for, whether it's Minnesota or the Thunder or the Denver. I mean, it doesn't matter. As long as the Celtics don't win, I'll be happy. That leads us to the West, where again, I mean, the best chance for the Celtics to be dethroned is probably going to be in the finals. It'll probably be a team from the West. The question is, what team will that be? Big game tonight. We got the OKC Thunder going up against the Mavericks. The Thunder have won the first 5 games of their postseason so far this year. I think this will be a series. I do think the Mavericks will find a way to come back and, if not win tonight, to, you know, make this a good series. Your thoughts on the series, but also tonight's game too.
Yeah, I think there's some factors we need to consider. I mean, Dallas has lost 5 straight game ones and they've won.
Right? Yeah.
I think they've won 3 out of 5 of those series, which is crazy, right? Like, so I do expect Dallas to win tonight. I do. I expect them to win game one. Luka's just so great at making adjustments. So is Kyrie Irving. So is Jason Kidd. They got poleaxed by the Clippers without Kawhi twice and still won that series, right? Like game one, they looked like the worst team in the NBA. They kind of looked similar in game one against the Thunder. Thunder are a good team. I never expected that series to be, you know, a 4 or 5 game series. Like even if Dallas had won game one, I would still say Dallas in 6 or 7. But a lot of people are picking the Thunder. I still think Dallas will find a way to win this series. I think they got too much star power. I really do. But OKC's defense ranked fourth in the NBA this season. If Dallas can really excel in transition, not let the Thunder get into their sets defensively a lot of the game, they'll be fine. So I think Kyrie really needs to excel in transition and get guys open and start scoring.
The other series, of course, that we touched on, the Wolves taking a 2-0 series lead against Denver, again, winning those first two games in Denver. Now the series transitions back or to Minnesota. There's a lot of people counting the Denver Nuggets out. They are the defending champions. They got the most valuable player. Jamal Murray has not played particularly well. I don't foresee that continuing for the entire series. Can Denver come back and make this a series?
Yes. I think they'll win game three. I really do. And the NBA made sure that it was a competitive game by not suspending Jamal Murray. If that was that was Christian Brown or Peyton Watson that did that, you would expect a 1 or 2 game suspension.
Probably like a 1 game suspension, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But also like you saw Rick Carlisle get ejected yesterday. Why wasn't Mike Malone ejected?
I agree.
The NBA seems like, are the officials protecting the Nuggets? Like, it's weird because it's not a particularly large market. You get it if they protect the Knicks and Celtics, right? Because those are like the teams Silver would die for in the NBA finals. Like, give me the Celtics, or like, please, no Indiana, no. You know, like, I get that. But Denver, I mean, Denver's a great city, don't get me wrong, but it's not a particularly large market. No. And Jokic isn't selling as many tickets, even though he's the best player in the league, as an Anthony Edwards or a Luka Doncic or even a Shea, right? Like, so to me, it's a little interesting. Again, competitive nature is everything. Like, if Jamal Murray was suspended for game three, they have 0% chance. So, and technically, then you have a 0% chance to win the series because you're down 3-0. I do think Denver pulls it out tonight, though.
Yeah,
I trust the best player in the world.
And it's such a key game because if they win game three, then they're in a position to tie up the series going back, and then they get home court back. So it completely flips. So, like, right now, as we sit here today, them being down 2-0, it does seem like they are in a dire predicament. The series can completely flip if they win that game three and obviously, you know, go on to win game four. I'm sure at some point we're going to be doing a mock draft that I wanted you to kind of touch on. Again, we've said how weak this draft class is. As you kind of begin that process, as more and more teams get knocked out and we kind of shift our focus to the draft lottery and the draft and things like that, your thoughts on the draft? Again, I know we have plenty of time to get to it, but is this one of the weaker draft classes that you've seen?
Easily. I think it's probably the weakest draft class of all time. Even the Anthony Bennett draft had Giannis Antetokounmpo, it turned out. you know, so it's not the weakest draft of all time. That would have been there. I think there's some guys with upside, like an Alex Saar, Ron Holland, Rob Dillingham. There's just a lot of like role players in this draft. And it's not a problem. It's just like if you're picking at the top and you need a guy, there's really only one or two guys that can maybe be a guy, possibly, but it's a huge risk. Like, I think Dillingham from Kentucky probably has the highest upside with Alex Saar. Both of those guys would be the first two off the board, in my opinion, because if you're picking at the top, you swing. Either you swing and miss or you swing and hit a home run. Like, you got to swing for the fences, right? Like, you can't be picking a role player with the first overall pick, right? So you don't go Reed Shepard or Topic or, you know, guys like that. As good as those guys are, they're role players in the NBA. Alex Saar has some two-way versatility. Don't know if he'll ever be able to develop a three-point shot at an NBA level like Jaren Jackson Jr., which is who he's comped to a lot. But defensively, he'll be able to cause problems. And Rob Dillingham is never going to be able to be an elite defender, but he can score at will. He reminds me of Tyrese Maxey, like a lot, actually, just in the way he can get open, shifty, makes things happen. He's probably the guy that we're going to look back on. This should have been easily the number one pick in this draft, just because of his offense. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores 15, 16 points per game. His rookie year turns into a 25 to 30 point per game score in the NBA. But again, he'll never be able to play defense. So, I mean, never say never, but it's not his forte, we'll just say. That's probably the best player in this draft. I'd love to see him paired with Victor Wembanyama, personally. But we'll see. He should be on the board when San Antonio picks.
One more draft question, and again, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this. The Lakers are there at 17. If Bronny James is there and you're Rob Pelinka and you got to make LeBron happy, and listen, from a business perspective, by the way, like that, the G League, and by the way, we would 100% cover every South Bay Lakers game if Bronny James was on that team. If you're Rob Pelinka, weak draft, number 17, do you take Bronny James?
Depends. He can't be worse than Jalen Hutchinson, right? So, like, I'm going to give Jake Dicker crap about that because he gave me crap about Paolo. I thought Chet should have been one. Yeah. Turns out he, you know, Paolo was really good. But I'm going to give him crap because he said I was an excellent pick. And I had him rated as like the 35th ranked guy. If you look back at my mocks, I don't know why they picked him. I wanted Podziemski, not even Hawkes. I wanted Podziemski of the Warriors draft. I thought he would have been a perfect fit. At the end of the day, I'm not mad at it if Dalton Kennett is gone or a guy like that connect. They need a shooter. If an experienced like 22-year-old shooter is available there, or a guy that can play defense at a high level, like a Devin Carter or a connect or like a wing, you know, Cody Williams, maybe if he's somehow there, I would pick. Terrence Shannon Jr. is another guy you can look at, plays a lot like Kelly Oubre. But if all those guys are gone, why not? I mean, it's a weak draft. Bronny has upside. He certainly has upside as a good role player. He has a high IQ. He plays defense, smart basketball player. If his jumper improves in the G League, he could be a solid NBA player. He's never going to be LeBron James, but I wouldn't mind the pick. I wouldn't.
Wanted to have some fun in the 90 seconds. Drake and Kendrick Lamar, according to betonline.ag, if Drake and Kendrick were to get into a boxing ring, Drake would be the slight favorite. Just generally speaking, again, these two guys have swept not only the nation, but the world. You know more than you've even said on this show about this rap and hip hop scene. Really quick, Drake and Kendrick, my friend, your thoughts.
Oh, man. hopefully I'll ask Money Mono this question. He's everyone's like a big Kendrick stan now, but the fact of the matter is Kendrick lied for 6 minutes on all of his songs. Like, there's no daughter for Drake. There's no evidence of Drake being a pedophile, right? Like, so like that's a bad argument. I mean, it was great songs by Kendrick. I mean, Drake would beat the crap out of him in a fight if you had like no weapons. Kendrick is 5'2". Drake is 6'1" and bigger. Yeah. Like, Kendrick might be mentally tougher, but you just got to look at the physicals, right? Like, Kendrick would get killed in a boxing match versus Drake, even though Drake's Canadian. Shout out to all the Canadians.
That's right.
I don't think it's as like Kendrick dominated as much as people think. Like, I think it's like more of a 50-50 type of thing personally.
Yeah, no, we'll have to bring on Grant tomorrow, maybe to get more of a breakdown. But I saw that spread come out online. And again, these companies like to go viral. So they see a viral moment and they put a spread out for who would win in a boxing match. But listen, we'll get into that tomorrow. Brandon, you're the best. We will have you back on tomorrow. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.